Hello. Welcome. Today is Tuesday, December the 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Congress will investigate alleged Russian meddling into the U.S. presidential election.
The Russians have been active using it as a tool as part of Vladimir Putin's ambition to regain Russian prominence and dominance in some parts of the world.
Later today, Donald Trump plans to reveal his nominee for America's top diplomat.
A number of Republicans and Democrats have expressed their concern.
China is not pleased with Trump's phone call with the leader of Taiwan. Also ahead, a California theme park with big expansion plans. It's all on today's International Edition. Intelligence communities in both houses of Congress launched investigations Monday into accusations that Russia interfered in the U.S. presidential election to boost the chances that President-elect Donald Trump would win. Separate probes about allegations of Russian cyber attacks amounted to an early rebuke by Trump, who over the weekend said the Central Intelligence Agency conclusion was ridiculous. He told Fox News in an interview that aired Sunday that the CIA conclusion was just another excuse by Democrats to explain his stunning upset over Hillary Clinton.
I don't believe it. I don't know why. And I think it's just, they talked about all sorts of things. Every week it's another excuse. We had a massive landslide victory, as you know. No, I don't believe that at all.
Arizona Senator John McCain and three other senators have been calling for an investigation into Moscow's interference in the election, saying it should alarm every American.
I think it's just another excuse. I don't believe it. I don't know why. And I think it's just, they talked about all sorts of things. Every week it's another excuse. We had a massive landslide victory, as you know. There's great confusion. Nobody really knows. And hacking is very interesting. Once they hack, if you don't catch them in the act, you're not going to catch them. They have no idea if it's Russia or China or somebody. It could be somebody sitting in a bed someplace. Personally, it could be Russia. I don't really think it is, but who knows? I don't know either. They don't know, and I don't know.
Well, joining me now to talk more about this, former CIA officer and current criminal law attorney Jack Rice. Thanks so much for being with us. How confident are you about the intelligence of Russia hacking our election?
I'm not shocked at all. Every intelligence organization in the world who's any good has focused on this issue and has tried to manipulate target countries. We've seen the same from the West. We've seen the same from the East. The Chinese and the Russians have done this over and over again. We've seen this in Ukraine. We've seen this in Georgia. We've seen this in some of the other southern republics. The idea that they would target the United States doesn't shock me in any sense of the word.
Should we be taking this more seriously than we have up until this point?
Yes, without question, because frankly, one of the most important things that the United States needs to take seriously and the American people need to take seriously is the legitimacy of their elections. If they're being manipulated in any sense, I think Americans need to appreciate and really look at this issue. This is not a left or right question. And unfortunately, in the environment that we are in right now, it's being treated like a left or right question, and it just simply is not. And it's very frustrating from those of us in and out of the intelligence community with a lot of experience within it, because we risk our lives on a daily basis sometimes in order to get very specific information.
President-elect Donald Trump says he doesn't believe what the CIA is saying. How concerned are you that he doesn't believe the CIA?
For him to look at this issue as simply a political one, to say, if I find legitimacy, then that makes my presidency less legitimate, is not how this should be addressed. This needs to be looked at objectively to determine exactly how much the Russians tried to influence and actually did influence the elections. This is about something much, much bigger than just this last election. This is about the manipulation of our election system, the legitimacy of our political system overall. It's not about him.
Well, Donald Trump and his campaign said, why should we believe the CIA when they were so wrong about Iraq and weapons of mass destruction? Does he have a point?
Of course he has a point. And I think that is actually a legitimate criticism when you see failure in the intelligence community and you see the effort to politicize intelligence. And in many ways, that's one of the things that happened during that time period. That in itself is exactly why this should not be a political question.
But Donald Trump's flat out saying he doesn't believe it. He's pretty much dismissing it.
He's doing more than simply dismissing it. He's actually saying that we shouldn't do anything to determine just how much, if anything, actually happened. So in other words, we need to ignore it. That's actually a step further than simply saying, I don't know that it's true or think that it's true. And that's frankly astounding. And it's astounding to those inside the intelligence community. And I'm telling you, there are registered Republicans, registered Democrats, registered independents who are throughout the intelligence community, and a lot of conservatives, frankly, who are hearing this and shaking their heads because they know that this is an issue that needs to be looked at.
The issue of intelligence briefings. Donald Trump has not been getting regular intelligence briefings. He's sort of breaking protocol from past president-elects. He made the comment a couple of days ago that he doesn't need to. He's a smart person. He doesn't need to hear the same thing every day. What do you say as someone who probably knows a lot about these briefings? Is he correct that he doesn't need to hear the same thing every day, or do things change every day, or how does it work?
He's fundamentally wrong on this issue because the daily briefs are not the same every day. Specifically, the point of a daily brief is to highlight something that's new, something that's developing, something that's significant that needs to be heard by the president. It goes through a very specific process before it actually gets to the desk of the president or the president-elect. This is not just some hypothetical piece of information where they think, hey, this is a great idea for a president to hear.
He does say that Mike Pence is getting daily briefings. Is that enough?
No, it's not. Mike Pence is not the president of the United States. The purpose of that daily brief is to get to the place where the buck is supposed to stop. He is the person who ran for the office. He is the one who was elected to be in that office. Guess what? It comes with responsibilities as well, and this is one of them.
And how important is any president's working relationship with the CIA and intelligence community?
It's critically important because this information is information that doesn't just stay with the agency. What you're finding is it goes out to State Department, it goes out to DOD, it goes out to everybody else in the U.S. government of consequence on these issues. If the president isn't fully briefed on it, doesn't fundamentally understand it, what you're going to find is he's going to have to defer a whole lot of decision-making to people who really shouldn't be making those decisions. And frankly, the more information he has, the better he is able to make those decisions. The less information he has, the more he's just winging it. And there's a lot of people who are risking their lives in order to provide information to him. For him to simply say, well, you know, I'll get to it when I'm in the mood, or I don't need to hear about this, or I'm a smart guy, is not just disrespectful. I find it, and I think there are a lot of people in the intelligence community who find it disgusting.
All right. Well, we certainly do appreciate your perspective. Former CIA officer and current criminal law attorney Jack Rice. Top Republican lawmakers and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and House Speaker Paul Ryan, who have endorsed the bipartisan probes. Trump's election opponent, Democrat Hillary Clinton, has been silent about the Russian hacking allegations, but her campaign manager now on Monday, John Podesta, is demanding that the administration of President Obama declassify and release all the information it has about Russia meddling into the election. Donald Trump's transition team says the president-elect will be announcing his nominee for America's top diplomat position later today. That would be the Secretary of State position. The investigation of Russia's interference into the election could complicate the confirmation for the person believed to be his pick, according to many news sources, ExxonMobil Chief Executive Rex Tillerson, Republican supporter in the Senate for Republicans in the Senate, I should say. Republican support for him looks shaky because of his friendship with Vladimir Putin. Joining me now to talk more about this is Pamela Chasek. She's a professor of international studies at Manhattan College in New York City. Thanks for being with us. What's your view on Trump's recent comments that it wouldn't be a bad thing necessarily to have a better relationship with Russia?
On the campaign trail, President-elect Trump said that we had to rethink our NATO alliance. That is bringing quite a bit of fear to many in Europe, particularly is the fact that the Russians have been definitely involved in supporting a wide range of European parties and actors that are at the far right and far left. And so a lot of the rise in these anti-immigrant European parties are being supported by Russia right now. So there's concern right now in Europe. Russia, with regard to Syria, is another concern that the support of the Assad regime, Russian dominance in Syria and potentially other parts of the Middle East could increase. And if the growth of Russian influence elsewhere, particularly if Russian is seen as a stronger global power than the United States.
The potential nomination of the ExxonMobil chief executive, Rex Tillerson, who is seen as Trump's most likely choice for Secretary of State, he has ties to Vladimir Putin. What kind of implications could that have?
A number of Republicans and Democrats have expressed their concern about the possible nomination of Rex Tillerson. And I don't know how much he's been vetted by the transition team at this point. The other concern with regard to Rex Tillerson is that Donald Trump says, well, you know, he's a world player. He has a great relationship with Vladimir Putin. The question is, you know, here you have a man who's been a career person at ExxonMobil. He's not worked anywhere else. His mindset is not only the corporate sector, but ExxonMobil. He has corporate interests in Russia. The sanctions that the United States had placed on Russia as a result of the annexation of Crimea have had an impact on the bottom line for ExxonMobil.
All right, Pamela Chasek. She's the professor of international studies at Manhattan College in New York City. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Remaining Syrian rebel-held Aleppo districts possibly now hours from falling. Ash Carter visits Israel to welcome F-35 jets. First U.S. offshore wind farm opens off of Rhode Island's coast. And energy companies in North Carolina move away from coal-fired plants. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com. This is International Edition. Well, China said Monday it had serious concern about President-elect Trump's most recent comments about Taiwan and warned that any changes on how America deals with the self-governing island could change or damage diplomatic ties between Washington and Beijing. China's comments Monday came a day after Trump said in a television interview that he didn't feel bound by a one-China policy. Beijing was already angered by Trump's December 2nd phone call with Taiwanese president, the first time an American president or president-elect has publicly spoken to a leader there in nearly four decades. China considers any reference to a separate Taiwanese head of state to be a grave insult.
I took a call. I heard the call was coming probably an hour or two before. I fully understand the one China policy, but I don't know why we have to be bound by a one China policy unless we make a deal with China, having to do with other things, including trade. I mean, look, we're being hurt very badly by China with devaluation, with taxing us heavy at the borders when we don't tax them, with building a massive fortress in the middle of the South China Sea, which they shouldn't be doing, and frankly, with not helping us at all with North Korea. You have North Korea, you have nuclear weapons, and China could solve that problem, and they're not helping us at all. So I don't want China dictating to me. And this was a call put into me. I didn't make the call. And it was a call, very short call, saying, congratulations, sir, on the victory. It was a very nice call. And why should some other nation be able to say, I can't take a call? I think it actually would have been very disrespectful, to be honest with you, not taking it.
Well, Trump followed the call with two tweets accusing China of manipulating its currency, unfairly taxing American imports, and provoking tensions in the South China Sea. But White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the United States government under the leadership of President Obama has been and remains firmly committed to a one China policy.
The United States values the close partner that we have in Taiwan. Certainly, President Obama doesn't view Taiwan as a bargaining chip. This is our ninth largest trading partner in the world and shouldn't be used as a point of leverage. It doesn't end up being good for our relationship with China. It also doesn't end up being good for for Taiwan.
Well, China split from Taiwan amid the Civil War in 1949 and continues to regard the island as a breakaway province to be reunified with the mainland by force if necessary. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
This is VOA's International Edition. Let's turn now to social media with G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hey, Lori.
So what's going on? What's the big story today on Twitter?
You know, the big story of tech heavyweights launching a billion-dollar clean energy fund is being talked about a lot. And leading that project is billionaire Bill Gates. Late Sunday night, Gates shared a link to an article by Quartz and tweeted, "I discussed with Quartz a major announcement for BT Energy and our vision for the future." Now, that handle belongs to Breakthrough Energy, which is a coalition that invests in new technologies that make power reliable, affordable, and also environmentally friendly.
Wow, that's a massive fund. Mm-hmm. So what's the reaction been like online?
I see mostly positive responses, and the top comment to the Gates tweet says, "He is a true American billionaire who appreciates and accepts science." You know, science has been a pretty big word during the election cycle. But it's not just American billionaires who are contributing to the fund. Richard Branson, who is the founder of the UK-based Virgin Group, is also part of it. He simply shared a link to his company's announcement page.
So has there been any negative reaction to this?
Yeah, as you can imagine, many climate change deniers don't see the point of this fund. Steve Miller is one of them. He describes himself as a top 10 climate change denier and a Fox News columnist, and he tweeted, "Energy tech is not dinner. It can't just be ordered. This fund will never produce anything of value except maybe some virtue signaling." His handle is @junkscience.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. So what else is trending?
Yeah, just like yesterday, I'm going to end it on a high note with holiday stories. December 12th, the Monday, was the National Gingerbread House Day. There was a competition for the best creation on display in South Carolina, and you can find photos of them on Twitter. The winning house was by a Canadian participant, and he took away $5,300 home.
All right. Well, we appreciate always talking to you and hearing about it. You can follow G at G Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. This is International Edition. Well, a popular thing to do in the warmer summer months and during school breaks in the United States is to spend a day or two at a theme park. And many of them have rides and games and junk food, entertainment, you name it. One of the biggest ones is Universal Studios in Los Angeles. Joining me now, reporter Chris Morris, who writes for CNBC, Fortune, and others, here to talk about Universal's plans to expand. Hey, Chris, what's the latest?
Universal Studios and Nintendo last year said they were teaming up and were going to be building a sort of special area for Mario and the various Nintendo characters, much like they've done with Harry Potter. Well, what they've done now is they've finally given us some specifics. The first Super Nintendo World, as it's called, will be opening at Universal Studios Japan in time for the 2020 Olympic Games. They're going to spend 50 billion yen, that's about $434 million, to develop and create these rides and attractions. That's pretty much on the same scale as what they spent for the first Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Now, the good news is, if you're here in the U.S., you don't have to travel to Japan to do these to ride these rides or see these attractions. They will be added in the parks in Orlando and in Hollywood, but as of right now, there has been no date specified for those.
So what exactly will this park, what will people be able to experience there?
Well, they haven't really talked about any of the rides that they're going to do yet. But you think about some of the attractions that are some of the games that Nintendo is famous for, like Mario Kart. That lends itself very much to a ride experience. If you think of some of the Mario games where you're sort of going along a path and going down warp pipes and things like that in the game, you can sort of see that as a ride. But it's Nintendo, so you never exactly know what they're going to do. Shigeru Miyamoto, who's the man that invented Mario, Donkey Kong, some of the most iconic characters in video games, he's working with Universal to come up with these rides and attractions. So they're going to be a little bit different, probably, than you're used to from a typical theme park.
Do you think something like this might expand into the United States?
Yeah, we're definitely going to see this in Orlando and Hollywood. The question is when. It's probably going to be post-2020, but you're probably looking at least 5 years down the road for something like this. One thing that's worth noting is Nintendo is not the only video game company that really is planning a theme park right now. Ubisoft last year announced plans for a similar standalone park in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. That's going to be a 10,000 square meter theme park. It's also expected to open in 2020.
All right. Looks exciting. Sounds exciting. We always appreciate hearing from you, freelance journalist Chris Morris, who writes for CNBC, Fortune, and others. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, one of the biggest stars in music could be ready to grab a bunch of Grammy Awards. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald shares all the details with International Edition host Jim Stevenson.
The 59th annual Grammy Awards. The big night will happen on February 12th in Los Angeles. Grammy voters nominated entries in 84 categories, and we have between now and then to argue about why they included the people they did or why they didn't put in our favorites. Beyonce leads all nominees with 9. She already has 20 Grammy wins. Her husband Jay-Z has 21, so this is her chance to leapfrog way ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
Drake, Rihanna, and Kanye West have 8 nominations apiece. Adele earned 5, and the main event this year in the Grammys would seem to be between Adele and Beyonce, because they're going head-to-head in 3 of the big categories: Album of the Year, Record of the Year, and Song of the Year.
Wow, that keeps it interesting.
And by the way, Record and Song of the Year are different, because Record of the Year honors the artist, Song of the Year honors the songwriter. Now, in the Album of the Year race, one of the surprises, at least for me, was that David Bowie's Black Star album didn't make the cut. Now, we have entries from Beyonce, Adele, Justin Bieber, Drake, and singer-songwriter Sturgill Simpson, who's got to be considered the dark horse in the Album of the Year race. Bowie died in January, but a lot of people, critics and fans alike, thought Black Star was still among his very best albums and deserving of an Album of the Year nod. Bowie did earn nominations for Best Alternative Music Album, Best Rock Performance, and Best Rock Song. So it's not like the Grammy committee completely overlooked him. Not surprisingly, Beyonce stirred a little controversy. Now, of course, she started the year by dropping her Lemonade album and performing a controversial halftime show at the Super Bowl. Well, her song Don't Hurt Yourself has been nominated for Best Rock Performance. So Beyonce is up for a Rock Grammy Award. She's going against Bowie, Alabama Shakes, 21 Pilots, and the band Disturbed. Disturbed is super heavy rock. And the members of Disturbed say, well, it's kind of weird to be running against Beyonce.
Wasn't she at the CMA Awards Country Music as well?
Well, her song Daddy Lessons, which she and the Dixie Chicks performed at the CMA Awards, and stirred up quite a bit of controversy among some of the country faithful. Daddy Lessons failed to make the cut for a country nomination. So the Grammy Country Committee drew the line at Beyonce, and that exclusion has also generated a little controversy. So Beyonce is in the eye of the storm.
You might call her the ultimate crossover artist at this point.
At this point, exactly right. Everybody has an opinion about Beyoncé.
That's Ray McDonald. You'll find him each and every week, our own Top 20 Countdown presenter on VOA 1.
And you can also find me on Twitter at Ray on the Hits.
Thank you so much, Ray.
All right, Jim.
Questioning you.
All right, well, that does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Nicole Beckford, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful, wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
With the stroke of a pen and a decisive vote by Colombia's Congress, the longest-running conflict in the Western Hemisphere ended. On November 24th, Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos, and Rodrigo Londoño, commander of the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, signed a peace agreement, and on November 30th, Colombia's Congress approved the accord. It was a difficult process and a long time coming. 4 years of difficult negotiations led to the first signing of an agreement in late September, which both sides hoped would end Colombia's 52-year internal conflict. But 6 days later, the Colombian people rejected the agreement by a narrow margin. Many voters felt it did not go far enough to hold FARC members accountable for their past actions. So it was back to the negotiating table for both sides, where a revised version of the document was agreed upon. On November 30th, Colombia's Congress voted to approve the revised accord. It now includes a requirement that FARC members declare and hand over all of their assets to pay for reparations to victims. FARC members must also declare the full truth about their involvement in drug trafficking. The agreement further defined the restrictions of liberty for those who committed crimes against humanity, and it clarified that the accord will not be incorporated into Colombia's constitution, as had been previously proposed. The United States welcomes the approval of the peace accord, which we believe will help achieve a just and lasting peace for all Colombians, said Secretary of State John Kerry. The Colombian people deserve enormous credit for their persistence, commitment, and focus in this endeavor. Special recognition must go to President Juan Manuel Santos, who has earned the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts, he said. Our Paz Colombia initiative, aimed at supporting continued institutional development, aiding conflict victims, removing landmines, combating narcotics, and addressing remaining security issues, is designed to help our Colombian partners achieve the lasting peace that they have fought so hard for and that they so richly deserve.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is